This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Tomorrow, families across the country will gather around a table and share a meal in celebration of Thanksgiving. The holiday is marked by many traditions. In some families, it is the recitation of a specific prayer or the retelling of a particular story. In others, it's the preparation of a certain dish year after year. During the holiday season, perhaps more than any other part of the year, families embrace or reject traditions. And that is one of the themes explored by The Monty, a North Carolina storytelling organization. Jeff Polish is the founder and executive director of The Monty, and he brings us some of the stories of Monty participants talking about their family traditions. Welcome back, Jeff. Good to have
you here. Great to be here. Thanks, Frank.
This is the time of year for storytelling, right?
It really is. And people love talking about their own family traditions. They love talking about family traditions gone awry. Conflict, especially when it comes to holidays. I mean, when we're dealing with holidays, people just roll their eyes. Oh, do I have a story for you?
That's right. And there's just so much more drama. I mean, you've got it all built in. Family, plenty of tension, expectations that tradition, you know, generates. Wow, there's the drama.
And also transformation. And so it's just ripe for great storytelling.
Let's get into one.
Oh, sure. This is a story by our very own hippo guy. He's a staple at the Monty. And this is a story about being a Presbyterian man who, with his wife, is raising his kids Jewish. And it's a story about him feeling like an outsider. That is, until Christmas comes along.
All right. So I am Presbyterian. And my wife is Jewish, so I should have everyone covered. And when she and I got married, we had a lot of discussions about, you know, how we were going to raise our family and what we were going to do. And ultimately, we decided that we were going to raise our kids Jewish. And that's what we've done. We've got three kids. And ultimately, that has been a fabulous decision for our family. However, there are times when I feel like a little bit of an outsider in my own family. They know all the prayers, and they know all the Hebrew songs, and they know all the traditions, and I don't know anything. So I find myself constantly kind of mumbling my way through Hebrew prayers and my four-year-old correcting me all the time. Daddy, that's not how you say that. Daddy, that's not what you do. Daddy, do you know what a menorah is? Yes, yes, I know what a menorah is. But the thing that really kind of brought it home for me the most was it was about a year ago, and our youngest son, Connor, he's four. He was in preschool at the time. And we sent him to a Jewish preschool up the street from where we live. And it's a pretty full-on Jewish education. They learn Hebrew, and they learn the songs and the prayers, and they celebrate Shabbat every Friday. And every day at the end of preschool, they have circle time. And the kids sit in a circle and they ask them a question, you know, what did you learn today or who did you have fun playing with? And one day last fall, they were going around the circle and they get to Connor and Connor's kind of hanging his head and he's looking really mopey. And they say, Connor, what's wrong? And Connor says, I'm sad because my daddy's not Jewish. Who knew it would be so hard to be Presbyterian in North Carolina? But there I was, and it kind of brought it home for me. I really am a little bit of an outsider in my own family, but there is a general exception to that rule. And the exception to that rule is the month of December. Because Daddy might not be Jewish, but Daddy does have Christmas. And, you know, I know a lot of interfaith couples who are raising their kids Jewish who don't deal with Christmas at all, but not us. Because my Jewish wife loves Christmas. She loves it. She loves the tree, she loves the stocking, she loves Santa Claus, she loves everything about Christmas. But the one thing she has a little bit of a problem with is the gifts. And it's not so much the idea of giving and receiving gifts, it's just in the whole month of December, it just gets to be a bit much. Our oldest son's birthday is in the middle of December, then we've got 8 days of Hanukkah where we sort of lavish presents on our kids, and then Christmas. And last year, she kind of decided, you know what, enough is enough. I feel like we kind of need to rein this in. So she decided that she was going to overhaul Hanukkah. And instead of giving our kids presents every night, we were going to celebrate a different gift every night. So the first night, we celebrate the gift of togetherness. And we go out and we rent a video and we set up the TV at the foot of the bed. And we all snuggle and watch a movie. And the kids loved it. It was great. So the first night, the gift of togetherness, big hit. The second night, things started to fall off a little bit. The second night was the gift of knowledge. And keep in mind, our children last December were 4, 6, and 8. My wife decides we're going to give them a book. And we're not only going to just give them a book, we're going to give them a nonfiction book. So we wrap these books and we bring them down. We gave my 6-year-old daughter, Samantha, a dictionary. And she opened it and burst into tears. So, all right, the gift of knowledge, not necessarily a huge hit. The third night was the gift of music, and we announced that we were going to go to a holiday concert and listen to some music, and sort of a long, pregnant pause, and finally Connor looks up and goes, "But what's the gift?" And it was kind of downhill from there. The fourth night was the gift of generosity, and we took them to Target and let them pick out toys and then made them give those toys away. Finally, we get to the eighth night, and we announce it's the gift of friendship, and we're going to have friends over for dinner. And that's it. And it kind of dawns on them, like, Hanukkah's over. And they haven't gotten any presents. And our 4-year-old, who, you know, of course, goes to Jewish preschool, and he's our expert on all things Jewish at this point, he looks up at Tamara with this exasperated expression on his face. He says, "Mommy, you're supposed to get a present every night on Hanukkah. You're doing it wrong." So fast forward a week or two, and it's Christmas. And when I was growing up, Santa Claus was not just supposed to bring you presents. Santa Claus was supposed to blow your mind. And that's how I grew up with Santa Claus, and so that's what I wanted to do for my kids. So they come downstairs on Christmas morning, and they've each got a chair. It's piled high with gifts, and there's bikes and guitars and video games and Legos and stockings with candy and more gifts under the tree. And by the end of the morning, all three of my children are sitting in front of these just massive piles of presents, this kind of like dazed, demented look in their eye that sort of says, "I'm ready, bring me my next present." And that was our Christmas. And if you look back on last December in our family and you were, you know, for instance, writing a book on parenting, you would look at Hanukkah and you think, that was pretty cool. You know, you're teaching your kid all these valuable lessons and that it's not all about presents and spending lots of quality time together. But if you look back on our December and you happen to be between the ages of 4 and 8, Christmas kicked Hanukkah's ass. And there's a small Presbyterian part of me that's pretty fired up about that. Eventually, Christmas came and went, and New Year's came and went, and we kind of got back into our old routines, and I figured we were kind of back to the status quo with Daddy being a little bit of an outsider. But about a month after Christmas, Connor was back in preschool, and they were having circle time, and the question of the day was, what are you thankful for? A lot of the kids were saying, I'm thankful for my family, and I'm thankful for my mommy and my brothers and my sisters. They get to Connor, and they say, Connor, what are you thankful for? And he thinks for a minute, and then my Jewish son in his Jewish preschool said Santa Claus.
Talking about traditions today, holiday traditions, and of course religion, a very important, a very common tradition at the holidays. An uncommon tradition at the holidays, Jeff Polish, is cheating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, this next story told by Tiffany Lopez, it's a beautiful coming-of-age story about a girl who learns to take a stand for what's right, and a story about a long-standing family tradition of cheating.
Growing up in small-town Alabama, I thought that traditions were something that rich people had, or at least people in the big city. But as an adult, looking back, I realized that even my poor, dysfunctional family had its share of traditions. Every year, our family, which was my mother, father, my older brother, and myself, would get together with my dad's 2 brothers, 2 sisters, and all their kids and have a Christmas party. The second tradition is that every year, my father would find a reason to declare that Christmas was being canceled. Every single year, he would say, "We're canceling Christmas," and then a few days later, he would reinstate it. The third tradition is that no matter what we were doing, no matter what game we were playing, my father was going to cheat. If we were playing Monopoly, he was going to be the banker, and he was going to slip himself an extra 100 or 2 every time he passed go. And from time to time, we would tape Jeopardy during the day and watch it together in the evening, and if he ever got home from work before us, he would watch the show, and then when we watched it together, he would have all the answers. When I was 13, I came home from school one day, and my dad is unwrapping a board game. It's Cheers Trivia, Cheers like the 1980s sitcom, And I said, "Oh, are we gonna play Cheers trivia?" And he said, "Well, actually, we're gonna play it at the family Christmas party, and we're gonna play in family teams. So it'll be us against all of his siblings and their families." And I said, "Well, don't you think that if we take an opened game over there, they're gonna assume that we've played it and that you're cheating?" And he said, "Oh yeah, yeah. We all chipped in and bought a copy that's gonna stay sealed until the party. This is our copy because we have 3 weeks, and we're going to study these cards and learn all the answers so we can kill them." And I'm 13, and I'm so, so idealistic and so innocent. And I said, "What if we just watch reruns of Cheers every night? And that way we're studying up, but we're not really cheating, so it's fair." And he said, "If you don't think that every one of them went and bought their own copy and that they're not at home making their kids study right now, you are crazy." So I gave in, and like anything that I did as a kid, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do the whole thing. So I study like it was my job. I would get up in the morning, make my lunch, put a stack of cards in my lunch so I could go through them at school. I would come home, do my homework, grab a stack of cards, run through them. And then a couple times a week, our family together would run through questions and quiz each other. So one day, one afternoon, about a week into the regimen, I decided that I was going to go log onto the internet and chat with some friends. And as I'm approaching the computer, I see that an instant messenger box has been left up by my father. And I am tingling with anticipation of what I can learn from this box, because while I do have a moral opposition to cheating, I did not have any sort of opposition to invasion of personal privacy or anything like that. I scroll to the top, and I read the entire instant message. But I'm not learning about what I'm getting for Christmas. What I'm learning about is the affair that my father's having. It's an instant message between he and his mistress. So at 13, that was a lot to take in. And I wasn't quite sure what to do, because I was the good kid, and I didn't talk back, and I didn't cause problems. And so for a week, I kind of carried it around with me and thought, there will be some time, something will come up, I'll know what to do, there will be a sign, I just know it. You know, I'll either tell my mother or my brother, or I'll just confront him. So a week goes by, and I've been avoiding everyone because I can't look at my father, I feel guilty talking to my mother and brother. So I sneak out of my room thinking I can get some food out of the kitchen and get back to my room, but my dad hears me and he says, "Hey Tiff, you should come in here." So I go, and they're gathered around and they're going through Cheers trivia. And he says, "Hey, you should study with us. We're running through these, and we've only got, you know, a week." I said, "You know, I've just been feeling so bad lately. I'm just so tired. I think I'm just going to take this to my room, eat it, and take a nap." And he looked at me, and he said, "You know, Tiffany, I think that maybe you should think about yourself a little less and your family a little bit more." I was livid. How dare he question my commitment to my family? How dare he say something like that to me when I know the truth about him? And there were so many things in that moment that I wanted to say, that I felt I had the right to say, but a lifetime of being scared of him and intimidated by him told me that I couldn't stand up to him. I couldn't say those things. I would probably never have the nerve to say them. But a lifetime of being surrounded by strong and vindictive Southern women told me that I could sure as get even with the So I started scheming and trying to figure out what I could do to hurt him most. So I'm thinking and thinking, there's just not a lot of things that are important to my dad, but I know that this Cheers trivia game is important, and for whatever reason, he really wants to beat his brothers and sisters, and I can take that away from him. So that was my new plan. The day of the party rolls around, and the way that the game was going to be set up was that every round, every family would have a question, but you had to rotate who was answering, and everyone had to take a turn. So you, in effect, you were only as strong as your weakest player. So we get to the party, and I'm ready to put my plan into effect. We start going around. I was new to the game of manipulation and deceit. So if present-day Tiffany could go back and talk to 13-year-old Tiffany, seasoned veteran sneaky, deceptive Tiffany would tell her that she needed to take some time with every question and pretend that she was thinking and that she was trying to do a good job. And I would tell her to pick the answer that seemed like the right answer, the trick answer, instead of picking the craziest answer on the board and doing it immediately after the question was answered. Because I just wanted to do it now and get the game over with and declare him the loser, and I win, you lose. And my father knew that I knew that Norm's wife's name was Vera, and that Cliff Clavin was a postal worker. So when I said things like, Norm's wife's name's Carla, or Cliff Clavin was a magician, my father was just growing redder and redder and angrier, and I know that he wanted to scream, "I know you know these answers. We've been studying for weeks. What is your problem?" But for once, I've got him where I want him, and he can't say any of that, because if he does, his jig is up, you know? And everyone's going to know he's a cheater, and game over. So we finish out the game, and we lose epically. For the rest of the party, my father is just berated with insults from his brothers and sisters, even the cousins, you know? Because he's so easy to mess with. He's so volatile. So, and I am possibly the smuggest I've ever been in my life. And, you know, that smugness continued until reality set in that I was going to have to leave the comfort and safety of my aunt's house and get in the car with him for the hour ride back home. But the ride was quiet, and the next day it was pretty quiet, too. And then we had dinner. Typically, my father turned to my brother and said, "Son, I just want to let you know that I've decided we're not having Christmas this year because your sister just doesn't care about the family and things that are important to me. So I don't think that we should, you know, play these games and pretend we're happy together and give gifts, and we're just not going to do it this year. We'll skip it." And my brother just nodded because he's smart. And things are quiet, and a few minutes go by, and he turns to me, and this is normally the point where I'm crying and begging to please have Christmas and apologizing for whatever I did or whatever my brother did, and please, can we please have Christmas, please? And I'm just quiet. And he says, "Tiffany, how does it feel to know that you ruined Christmas?" And for the first time in my whole life, I didn't think about what I was going to say to him. I didn't process. I didn't calculate what the outcome was going to be and what was going to happen to me. I just spoke from my heart. And I said, "I don't care. I don't think that I deserve Christmas. So I think you're probably right to call it off, because you don't deserve Christmas either, because you're a cheater." And there was just this flicker in his eye, just for a second, when I said cheater, where I think that maybe I'd like to think that he knew that I knew, or he had a moment of realization about the reality of what he was doing. But I can't stand here and tell you that that's what happened. I can't tell you for certain that he had that moment or that he really changed. What I can tell you with certainty is that it was the quickest reinstatement of Christmas that our family ever had. By the time the dishes were dry, we had the Christmas tree up, two boxes of ornaments, Christmas lights. My dad was practically singing, "Oh, Come All Ye Faithful." My dad died 3 years ago, and at that point, we hadn't spoken in several years. You know, it's funny how some things you inherit from your family and some things you just don't. Because a few weeks ago, I was playing Scrabble with my friend Holly. She was beating me by like 150 points. And she got up from the board to go to the bathroom. And I grabbed the letter pouch and just started exchanging letters. It was animal instinct. I could not sit there and let her beat me this way, you know? It just could not happen. But that's just a game of Scrabble. And in the big picture, Scrabble is not what's important. What's important to me is being true to myself and being true to the ones that I love, and I would never cheat on my family.
Family Traditions, a sample of the Monty. Jeff Polish, the founder of the Monty, is with us, and I guess the holidays and traditions bring out the best and the worst in all of us.
Absolutely. There's a whole spectrum, and they're all on display for everyone to see.
Jeff, the Monty's great. Thank you for sharing those samples with us today.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Jeff Polish, the founder and executive director of The Monty, a North Carolina storytelling nonprofit. More of these stories and a link to storytelling at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new take on the history of Thanksgiving. Stay tuned.